now.
I don't know who he is behind that mask of his, but I do know when we need him. And we need him now.
I'll call him, sir.
For some reason, the cool bars in Hollywood have to be hard to find and have no sign.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
Like many of the listeners of the Cocktail Nation, I just love mid-century modern architecture. This week we talk of a giant of MCM and that of Harry Seidler. We talk men's accessories along with the passing of a Hollywood legend. Right now, Narco Lounge Combo and White Rum on the Cocktail Nation.
This is the Cocktail Nation, thanks to Ultraswank.net.
Cocktail Nation, Coop Cooper, Daniel Pemberton, Finding the Fury. Book this week we're going to be talking about is A Singular Vision. It's a book which is all about Harry Seidler, amazing architect, and it's beautifully produced by HarperCollins. It tells the life of Australia's most remarkable and polarising modern architect. In design and concept, this book is inspired by the architect's own work and is quite literally standing up for itself as a real example of MCM. Within its handsome hardback cover lies the extraordinary against-the-odds tale of an imprisoned child refugee whose single-minded determination saw him become one of the most powerful creatives of his time. Joining me is author Helen O'Neill. And Helen, his singular vision was truly modernism, wasn't it?
You could say that, yes, you could say that. When Harry Seidler arrived in Australia in 1948, he brought with him a vision about modernism that very few people who'd set foot in this country had ever had before, because of who he'd learnt from, which was Walter Gropius, Marcel Breuer, Joseph Albers, Oscar Niemeyer too. All these huge names of modernism. Now, Harry Seidler had come to Australia. He'd been lured here by his mother as a young architect. She'd thought of the perfect, perfect temptation, and she offered her son the chance to create a home, a house for the family, for herself and her husband. And she gave him pretty much carte blanche. I'm sure there were some limitations with regards to cash, but he could do anything he liked. So he arrived in 1948, and almost before you know it, he's created something called Rose Seidler House. And the impact of that one modernist home, a simple family home in many ways, was extraordinary. I think the ripples are still being felt today.
Well, I mean, yeah, people still go to see the Rose Seidler House and are still amazed by it. But this was his very first commission, was it?
It was indeed. Yes, it was indeed. He'd worked in New York with Marcel Breuer on some of Breuer's commissions, but this was the first time he'd done anything of this nature that was purely his. And the approach he took to it was, there was no holds barred here. It was really, it was architecture, but not for the faint-hearted, modernism, but really, what a vision. He incorporated into it a mural, which was interesting, because as he'd been traveling around South America, he'd noticed some of the mural, the very brightly coloured work going on there. And he himself painted a mural in those bright primary colours that were so very groundbreaking at the time. We're used to all this now, but it's, you know, looking back on it, he was doing something that hadn't been done really quite like this in Australia before, and that was only taking place around the world in certain areas. Yeah. It was, remarkable.
In the United States, mid-century modern homes were very, very common. There were a lot of architects doing this sort of thing. But in Australia, for example, the old fibro house was very, very common. Something like Rose Seidler House really was right out of the box. And there isn't a great amount of modernism on show in Australia, so it really was quite revolutionary for the time. You talked about some of the great people that he'd worked with. He was pretty much self-taught, wasn't he, as an architect?
Such a crazy, unusual life story, yes. I mean, he was, in a sense, self-taught, but it happened because of some... I mean, Harry Seidler's life story is one of those that traverses some of the most traumatic events of the 20th century. So he was born into a Jewish family in Vienna in 1923. By the time he was a teenager, Hitler had walked in to that country and claimed it as part of Germany. So all Austrian Jews at that point were in a very, very precarious state. Seidler's family managed to get him out to London, where after a while, as a child, he was actually interned by the British, because by this stage he was travelling on German passports. There was no such thing as an Austrian one anymore. So despite the fact that he was Jewish and a boy and a refugee, he was incarcerated without any knowledge as to when he would be released. And it was in this time, during this time in Seidler's life, that he managed to, you might say, teach himself architecture. Because one of the extraordinary things about this was that the British, they took a terrible broad brush approach to this. Inside, incarcerated with people like Harry Seidler, were architecture professors. Right. There were art teachers. It was a remarkable group of people.
Mm.
And in order to, I guess, pass the time away, in a sense, classes started forming. And Seidler, who by this stage was 16, 17, had realized, I think, that architecture was for him. And so he decided to just block out the wider world by concentrating on architecture and learning everything he could from the people around him. And indeed, he managed to get out of internment by getting into the second year of an architecture degree in Manitoba. The college, the University of Manitoba, accepted him as an architecture student because his work was so strong. So, yeah, architecture really defined him in a way that it's difficult to understate.
Tell me, why in Australia is Harry Seidler such a divisive character? When you talk to people about Harry Seidler or his work, people either love him or they hate him. why is that?
I think that's actually a more complicated thing than it sounds. There were a lot of aspects to this man. One of his features was that he was always kind of fighting for causes. And the key cause to him was modernism.
Mm.
He was absolutely fervent about this and determined to not just do it, but actually he walked the talk, he talked the talk. He wanted to tell everybody and explain what modernism was all about. And certainly when he first arrived in Australia, he became entangled with local authorities quite quickly, and he became frustrated because he felt that the people who were kind of judging his work, as he saw it, had no basis upon which to do this. So he got involved in court cases, which he would often win but sometimes lose, to do with the integrity of the homes and, you know, the buildings he was creating. And for a long time there, he was, a controversial figure, but in a very positive way. People really, you know, admired him. And when Jørn Utzon, with the big opera house saga that took place in the 60s and the 70s, where Jørn Utzon was eventually made to leave the opera house, Harry Seidler was right at the front of the campaign to attempt to keep him, and then the campaign ongoing to attempt to get him back in some form, because he believed that you know, this sort of creativity, this sort of excellence deserved championing.
A Singular Vision, Harry Seidler. Helen O'Neill, thank you so much for your time. I've got to read this book because I tell you what, this sounds like some marvellous stories about this incredible man.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I hope you enjoy it. I must say the book was a pleasure to do, and it's rare indeed that a journalist has a chance to engage with such a fascinating, fascinating creative character.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Just like a chasm, you know enthusiasm. You're tired and uninspired. You're blasé. Your day is one of leisure, in which you search for pleasure. You're bored when you're adored. You're blasé. Passing by, you sleep, the sun is shining, you wake, it's time for dining, there's nothing new for you to do, you're blasé. the sun is shining, you wake, it's time for dining. There's nothing new for you to do. Your blase. Blase.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
Hello, baby.
Thank you.
Cocktail Nation, Coop Cooper, Cy Zentner, and the Third Man theme. These days, most young men are not into men's accessories, but I'm here to tell you that the truly swank man has plenty of accessories, and that accessories truly make the man. A well-kitted-out man will have a collection of tie bars, cufflinks, watches, and other manly accessories. But where should he place them? Should they be left on a bowl with his keys and small change? Certainly not. Just like the ladies, a well-equipped man will also have a jewellery case. The difference is that a man's case will be less ornate and probably have less compartments, and more likely than not will be of a manly mahogany or teak finish. A nice jewellery box says a lot about a man and says that he's refined, organised and cares for his nice possessions. Dumping your effects into a bowl just says the opposite. Plus, it's not very practical when you're in a rush and you need to select the right accessories to make your suit work perfectly. In addition, it must also be said that having several variations of accessories is a must. One can't get away with just one watch or two watches. At least four or more are necessary. And a similar amount of cufflinks, tie bars and rings are vital. Place all these items into a nice manly compartment and you are ready to conquer the world with style and sophistication. You see some great examples on my website, cocktailnation.net, and an example of the jewellery case that I use. Here's Art Blakey now on the Cocktail Nation. Cocktail Nation Coop Cuba with Mr. Ho's Orchestrotica and Anna Lucia. News this week of the passing of Mickey Rooney. He was the original Hardy Boy. His 200-plus film credits notwithstanding, the spry, spirited Rooney will be best remembered for playing the beloved Andy Hardy.
I've got a right to stay out as late as I want.
He's one of the most famous child actors in history who became a giant of the silver screen.
People in our business are the luckiest people in the world. We're grown-up children making believe.
In 1944, he starred opposite Elizabeth Taylor in National Velvet.
Well, goodbye, everybody. Don't worry about me.
And it was Hollywood's golden age that Rooney was one of the biggest stars.
Good morning, good morning.
After the war, his fame dissipated and his marriage to Ava Gardner collapsed. But he made tens of films with Judy Garland and one with Audrey Hepburn, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
This time, I'm calling the police!
Asked what he wanted on his epitaph.
Just two words. I tried.
You can read more about his life. Now, news from across the globe. Page of my website, cocktailnation.net. Here's Catherine Hunter. Only trust your heart on the Cocktail Nation.
Never trust the stars when you're about to fall in love. Look for hidden signs before you start to sigh. Never trust the moon when you're about to taste his kiss. He knows all the lines and tricks so often tried. Just wait for a night when the skies are revealing. If you still care, never trust your dreams when you're about to fall in.
Lisa from Wollongong.
Hey, this is Joe from Menai.
Hey, this is Josh from Waterloo, and you're listening to
The Cocktail Nation.
Cocktail Nation, thanks to ultraswank.net. Some good news for lounge fans with two new releases coming our way from the Martini Kings. We've got David Gaston's This Is Vintage Now, Volume 2. That's going to be out soon. And you can preview and pre-order Blow, the second release from Louis Prima Jr. and the Witnesses. Here's the website, louisprimajr.com. And certainly get behind these releases. It's a great way to not forget about the releases that are coming out. So sign up for their updates. Show some support for these marvellous bands. Time for a look at the world of swank now, thanks to TikiDelights.com. TikiCon 2014 coming up July 11, the Pacific Northwest Polynesian Pop Extravaganza at the Red Lion Hotel, Vancouver at the Key. The Martini Kings have various gigs right through to August. They are playing at the Tonga Hut in Palm Springs. Details on my website, cocktailnation.net. The final Aloha for the Hukila, June 11. Alika Lyman Group playing May 17, Tiki Caliente. DJ Baz, he plays regularly, and you can see him in Palm Springs at 369 North Palm Canyon Drive in downtown Palm Springs. And Otto's Grotto, the Thursday night gig, you can make the scene at Forbidden Island, Alameda. And the exotic sounds of Tikiaki 5-0 on May the 10th, which is a Saturday, 254 North Palm Canyon Drive, Palm Springs. And don't forget Mojave Oasis in April, April 11, mojaveoasis.com. Plus Friday, June 6, you can see Louis Prima Jr. and The Witnesses with their official album release of Blow. For these gigs and many more on the net, cocktailnation.net. Here's Paul Phillips and Tenderly on The Cocktail Nation.
This is the Cocktail Nation. Thank you.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
Nation, Langela to Coop Cooper, Chet Baker, and Forgetful. I am no longer as I have an iPhone. Next week on the show, we are in the kitchen. Going to leave you with Shirley Scott now and Dreamsville on the Cocktail Nation.